next case is 99-437, State of Ohio versus Derek Kenny.
And everything should go to the jury. Every question of the defense should go to the jury.
What the hell?
Jesus Christ.
I didn't think that was part of the argument. The BB gun could have been used as a deadly weapon.
Well, that's Well, Your Honor, it could be a deadly weapon. It doesn't really matter as far as the firearm justification language, though, because it wasn't a firearm.
Yeah, so we can't, for the purpose of the statute, you can't say it's a firearm, right? Because the statute is very, very specific.
In fact, it was identified as a fake gun, I think.
Right, it was a
Let me ask you, let's change this a bit and make both of these juveniles adults. Could you charge the second adult who had the fake gun or the pellet gun or whatever it was with robbery under the same circumstance if they were adults? Can you charge the second adult with aiding and abetting and getting for a firearm specification?
I need to exact that.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Your Honor, you can. Under both State Chapman and State Moore.
Then why would it be different here? Because this says the child is alleged to have had a firearm on or about the child's person or under the child's control. And haven't we said that if you go into a store with somebody as an adult who has the firearm, you're also guilty of that.
Right, exactly. That's the state's argument. Now, under Chapman and Sadie Moore, the language was a little different in that it was only that the offender had to have the firearm on or about his person or under his control. And the mandatory transfer statute in this case adds language which is the offender or the juvenile must display, brandish, indicate possession of, or use it to commit the facilitation of the act charged.
The additional words are to have displayed the firearm, brandished the firearm. Those aren't in the adult statute, is that right?
Well, they're actually in the firearm justification statute.
Sure they are.
The 3-year one, not the 1-year one. There's a difference between the two, but...
Does that make a difference between Category 2 offense and a 1 offense?
No.
Then what's your point? What is your point in the difference between them?
My point is that even though both languages on or about the offender's control or and display brandish, mm-hmm. both of those would support a personal possession interpretation, but under this court's decisions in State v. Chapman and State v. Moore, that should be rejected and the common law standards and the implicit statute should be applied. That was my only point, that if we go further with the language here than actually what this court has addressed previously in Davey Chapman and Davey Moore. But that was all recognized by the courts of appeals in the decisions that I attached to my brief, the second district in Davey A.G. and Davey Davis, and the ninth district in Davey Collins, and also the Attorney General's advisory opinion.
Are you going to comment? I have a problem in this case. I always look at the statute to see what the General Assembly must have intended by the words it used. And it just seems to me that the General Assembly, if it intended to include complicity in the specific requirements it included for mandatory bindovers, that it would have said so. I guess I see the bindover statute as different than the complicity statute. One's a procedural statute. The other is a substantive statute. I guess the problem I'm having is concluding that the General Assembly, when it was very specific in what conditions have to be extant for a mandatory bindover of a juvenile, I mean, the policy of the law has been generally that we give juvenile court judges a fair amount of discretion in deciding whether a juvenile should be kept in the juvenile system or bound over to the adult system. And I guess what's your strongest argument that the General Assembly really did intend that complicity be included when it didn't say so in the statute?
A couple of things. First of all, because under the complicity statute, the offense can be stated in terms of complicity or in terms of the principal offense. That's one reason why I imagine the General Assembly did not include complicity. Also, just this House Bill 1 was enacted in response to public concern regarding serious juvenile offenders, serious juvenile repeat offenders. To say that a juvenile is less culpable in a case like this, where the juvenile commits an aggravated robbery, puts 9 people's lives at risk, by going in with a co-defendant who has a real handgun to make the distinction in this case that just because he had a Crossman pellet gun, when he was fully with the co-defendant who had the Ruger 9mm gun, would just be an artificial distinction, is the state's position, based on the policy behind the law and on this court's decisions in State v. Chapman and State v. Moore, and just the theory of simplicity that whatever you do with your accomplice, you're equally culpable as to what your accomplice does, anything that's reasonably foreseeable arising out of that fact pattern.
The simplicity in the law setting requires that you know that your associate has a gun, or you don't like it.
Well, it would depend on the facts and circumstances of the case, but what it is, I think it's more like a reasonably foreseeable type of thing. In the fact pattern you gave me just a few minutes ago, about the two juveniles and the one says to the other, let's go rob the store, I don't know if you said store or something. I mean, I think at some point the other juvenile has to contemplate that some type of weapon or some type of force is going to be used, or how do you propose to rob people? I mean, you're not going to walk up to someone or into a store and they're going to give you the money. I mean, at some point,
you could simply say to them, grabbing a person and dropping them and pulling a gun, and you're not going to let them pull them to the back of the level.
And again, that would depend on the facts and circumstances of the case. And if the two juveniles just grabbed a person from someone, and they didn't use a firearm, either one used a firearm, neither one would be subject to mandatory bind over.
But under your theory, then the lack of knowledge about the juvenile caught the juvenile.
Well, I imagine, Your Honor, at the time that the juvenile was so surprised that the co-defendant pulled out a real gun, that the juvenile can renounce his criminal purpose at that point and disassociate himself from the offense.
Like if I did see that, if you do a strict interpretation of the statute that is written, it's not based religiously.
Yeah, sure.
The judge still has the power to find it. If the judge felt a certain
he could be dead, too.
Yes, and in fact, possession of a firearm is also considered under discretionary transfer as well. There's no question that he could have been bound over anyway. It's just the fact of the case, based on what he did, and that mandatory required mandatory transfer, if you accept the common law principle and the theory of simplicity, must apply in these circumstances, which they absolutely should. The juvenile is not any less culpable merely because he's the one with the pellet gun or no weapon at all.
Well, except that the whole idea of binding over juveniles is giving discretion is to distinguish between those juveniles who are better left in the juvenile system, for whom rehabilitation in the juvenile system may be more productive than binding them over to the adult system and putting them in that system. And that's the reason the complicity statute, or the mandatory bindover statute, I think is so limited, is that the General Assembly recognized that. That's the problem, at least that's the problem I'm having, is it would be easy if it was just a couple of adults, because we assume incorrectly that adults are responsible for the conduct. That's what the law assumes, but with juveniles we don't. And that's why to just say, well, he was in there with an adult who had a gun and say he could have gotten out of it, I don't think so. I don't think a juvenile in the midst of this kind of action is going to say to the adult, oh, I'm getting out of here. He might have a shot in the back. So I think we have to be a little more discerning in what the General Assembly really intended. Oftentimes we can draw, obviously, principles from what the General Assembly has said. Here, I'm looking for a reason, I guess, why we should do that when we're dealing with juveniles, given the history of juvenile rehabilitation in the system.
We are. I understand the concern, but I think what this legislation has recognized in that these very limited situations, even if we bind over juveniles under a complicity theory, it still will be very limited. But in these very limited situations, and I know that trial courts and juvenile courts and judges in general do not like their discretion taken away from them, but what this is a recognition by the General Assembly that in these cases, in these very limited situations, discretion needs to be taken away from the juvenile judge, and the juvenile needs to be mandatorily transferred to adult court. The result of that would be, that actually would have a good result. It would mean light cases would get light treatment. There would, juveniles would be probably not overboard in a fair, equitable, consistent manner, because in that case, the discretion is taken away. Now, of course, the juvenile court judge still has discretion to determine whether or not the state has shown probable cause, whether or not the juvenile acts were sufficient in aiding or abetting to warrant application of the mandate. So it's not as if it's taking away the juvenile court's discretion in total. It's just saying in these very limited situations, the general assembly's recognition that some juveniles, based on the act that they commit and the risk that they take and the chance that they take with other people's lives, never belong in the juvenile system to begin with. But so it doesn't take away all the juvenile court's discretion, but it does very much limit it, but only in very specific situations.
Is it possible, though, counsel, that the General Assembly wished to limit those situations to the situations where they're going to look at the individual child and not go to principles of accomplice liability, as you suggest, because liability is a whole separate thought process and factor. That liability will be decided, accomplice liability or not, but they want to look at what happened with this child? Did he have a gun, a firearm? Now, that it's possible those are distinct considerations, isn't it?
Your Honor, it is more than possible, except that the reason that this House bill was enacted was in response to...
I understand. But they might have only... I mean, it's still... Even with that response, it might have been the choice of the General Assembly to so limit that category to just look at each child and say, did this child have a firearm?
I guess it just seems, with all due respect, unlikely to me that they would have tracked the language that they did of the firearm specification language in Title 29, that they would expressly use every definition of the offenses from Title 29. I never think that complicity would apply. I guess that's my
that's
problem
right.
with it.
I see that.
It seems impossible that they wouldn't have thought of that. Complicity overlays all of criminal prosecution. Mm-hmm. And what we're talking about in these cases are, I don't even know if we're so much dealing with the principles and purposes of the juvenile system, because what the General Assembly has recognized is that these juveniles don't belong in the juvenile system. They belong in the adult system.
Thank you, Ms. Clark.
Thank you.
Mr. Keeley.
Many other statutes, of course, the argument of the state is in so many other statutes we don't always add, and by the way, the complicity statute applies here, and it applies here, and it applies here. It's an overlay.
The express meaning is clear in the bindover statute. It specifically states the juvenile has to have the number under his control. There is no provision for mandatory bindover that's based upon any complicity theory. In order to overrule that express language or to ignore it, you would have to look elsewhere to find some place where the legislature expressly and clearly indicated and otherwise.
But all that one has to do is engage in the general thinking process that we engage in every time we attribute liability to an accomplice based on complicity.
We don't engage in a thinking process to do that. We apply the complicity statute.
Right, and it could, so you say it can't be applied here.
No, when you read the duplicity statute, you can read it, you can reread it, you can have your law clerks read it, you can run a word search on the computer, but you're not going to find any reference to the duplicity statute to how that statute applies to final criteria.
Right, I agree.
None.
Sure.
None. Zero.
Nor is there, how should we then say, but so it doesn't apply because it's also not referenced in many other statutes.
It applies to
the juvenile, you say.
It applies to only the commission of offenses. I mean, I think what you have here, and I think how the other districts kind of lost their way, is if they looked at the decision, this court's decision in Chapman, and said, well, the complicity statute applies to farmer specifications, and then they looked at the find over criteria that reads like the farmer specification, and they said, well, if it applies to the farmer specification, then it must also apply to this other creature, this mindover criterion that also sounds like the farmer specification, but it's not. It's a separateness. It's a factor that we're to consider. And it says it's not, as used there, it's not an offense, it's a mindover criterion. This statute only applies to offenses. The other thing we look at is assuming the state is correct, assuming that you can apply the statute, well, then the duplicity statute will apply to all the minors. And then you can bind over somebody because a 10-year-old, because his accomplice was 16, you had him. If you literally apply it, and that's what they indicated in their brief at page 9, they said that the duplicity statute indicates that a person must stand in the shoes of his accomplice for purposes of prosecution and punishment. If you want to take that application and apply it broadly, like the state suggests, you wouldn't even have a mind over proceeding in this case because the accomplice was a dog, so you would prosecute and punish the juvenile as if he were a dog.
Well, but 4B says a juvenile has to be at least 14, doesn't it?
So what?
4B says 2151.26B4B.
That's a find over criteria, but if the accomplice theory applies to all these find over criteria, then if the accomplice is 14, then why couldn't you find over a 10-year-old on the theory that we're prosecuting him the same as the accomplice of the complicity?
I think there, I don't know how you make that argument, because the statute's so clear there that the child has to be at least 14.
Well, I don't know how you make it anyway. You're right, the statute's clear, and it's clear on the mandatory bindover provision that the child must have. The other thing is, just look at it in its application. You can have a child to be guilty of some business. You don't have to do substantial. That's not what the law says. Justice Stratton alluded to that. It's any act that aids in the commission of an offense. And as I stated in my brief, it can be so minimal that it's an offender going up to a juvenile's ability. Let me use your bike and we'll go around the convenience store. Billy gives him the bike, he's done an act that's taken in the commission of that crime. He is just as guilty under the complicity statute as is the principal. Because he did an act of aiding him. But he's not going to be bound over because he did not do the robbery, he did not have the gun on his person. Now, he can be charged with juvenile court, and the justice does really require it. He can be charged with a delinquency count of aggravated robbery with a firearm specification in juvenile court. He can't be bound over unless he actually has the right suspicion. He can always be bound over as long as he's 14, he's committed a felony. If the judge determines that he's not amenable to treatment as a juvenile system, then he can be bound over. Exactly. And that's one of the things the courts have long complained about. Any kind of mandatory bind over proceeding, citizen proceeding, is that the discretion of the judge is being removed. And when you remove the discretion, you will have times when the law will be partially and improperly applied. I don't think you have to go about an artificial search out that judicial discretion.
Seems you believe in judicial discretion at the trial court.
Certainly.
Sounds like
you
do.
This is a case. Legislation, the people are free to take it away in limited circumstances. But this is defendant to bind over somebody else. To treat a juvenile, which is the minimal act, to bind him over under the broad label of publicity, when he could have been 100 miles away from the robberies and the firearm. But under the state's interpretation, if he did any act that helped in that, then too bad, your life's over, which we can use an adult, throw it away. And then legislators, so we're not going to be that harsh, we're not that harsh.
I understand your argument about bind over and complicity and all of that. In fact, that's all your brief discussed. You were talking about the prosecutor's outrageous arguments and the prosecutor's ridiculous conclusions and things like that. I'm wondering why you didn't argue the statute itself. It seems to me the statute itself has a qualifying factor in it, and the Court of Appeals didn't look at it, and maybe you can dissuade me from this, although I don't know why you'd want to. While committing the act charged, and it's in the conjunctive, not the disjunctive, and to have displayed the firearm. And to have displayed the firearm. He didn't display the firearm, did he?
No.
He didn't have it to display.
He didn't have the firearm.
Well, but why would you not have argued that the statute, the literal words of the statute, and to have displayed the firearm?
Well, that's what I'm arguing. The literal words of the statute is clear that the trial has to have the firearm. More about this person under control. He must display the brandish of the firearm.
Well, mostly what you've argued is the prosecutor's argument and the bind over and the complicity statute, but I guess what I was looking for is to start with the statute, and if he isn't culpable under the statute, then it ends there, doesn't it?
Yes, you're exactly right. That's the beginning point in any statutory construction, is you have to start with the statute. And in this case, it expressly and clearly indicates that the juvenile must have his firearm work out of the first witness control.
Well, then State v. Davis was wrong, too, from the 2nd District.
Those cases were wrong, and the Franklin County appeals to address those cases, but what they said is that they did not go into any legal analysis of those positions. They just said, speculation, well, Jackson says that this implies a firearm specification. This final criteria sounds like one, so we're excited that that is because it's not like a firearm specification. It's language similar to the firearm specification, which is used to find a sense of it, but it's over here, it's used to define a final criteria. And
when we charge these, this kind of activity as an adult, if a person is an adult, and I've forgotten, does that statute say, and you must display it?
Yes. Well, this would be similar to the adult minor, or to the adult.
Well, in those cases, we found complicity to lie and to charge the person who didn't.
That's because firearm specification used that way constitutes an offense as defined as an offense. In this particular case, they used that same language because they're familiar and comfortable with it. They use it to find a binding criteria. The reason the complicity statute doesn't apply here is because the complicity statute, by its own terms, confines itself only to the application of offenses. It does not go beyond that and apply itself to mind over criteria or anything else. If it did, if that were the intent of my brief, the example would be the same for sentencing. If you're going to be punished as a same as your accomplice, then you would look at the background of the accomplice, and you would be punished based upon your accomplice's rather. You would have bail set upon your accomplice's lack of
speedy trial.
The complicity statute doesn't reach all these other procedural areas of the justice system. It says that you can be prosecuted as a principal within the offense, and it's only, it doesn't mean if your accomplice waives speedy trial, you lost your speedy trial rights too. It doesn't have that broad-reaching effect that the state wants it to reach into these defined over criteria. It just doesn't go that far. It has a limited application, and that limitation is linked to offenses. So the legislative intent is clear. This is not a difficult case. I think it's good. It's here because the couple of districts are in disagreement. It's merely a simple statutory construction argument. You look at the plain meaning of the mind over statute. There's no provision in there that anybody can bound over on the Congress theory of displaying the articles of information. There are no questions.
Thank you, Mr. Keeley.
Thank you.
Ms. Gillespie, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
And the point I was trying to make is that the fourth personal possession interpretation was that this court rejected that. And then my further point with that is that the mandatory transfer statute does add language that the offender must display, brandish, indicate possession of, or use, and that that also would support a personal interpretation. But under State v. Chapman and State v. Moore, that should be rejected in favor of completing the statute being applied.
I don't think it says what you just said. It goes on and says, and displays.
I'm saying you have to do it both. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to say
okay.
But I'm saying both sections, even together, even saying that they support a personal possession interpretation, under State v. Chapman and State v. Moore, this court has already rejected that.
Counsel, your life's on, but I'm curious, Matt. This juvenile, while all of this is suspended, the trial court found the juvenile over. He hadn't bound over. There's no way to look at the juvenile detention facility. So, what happened?
He was guilty and he was sentenced to 7 years of incarceration. At that point, he was in, and I believe this is in Martin's library, Jackson Pike, the correctional facility in Jackson Pike, where he was called as deputy. And then, once the Court of Appeals remanded, though, he was sent back to the Franklin
County
Jail, awaiting proceedings
in the juvenile court.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blunt. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Take a brief recess.
All rise.